Want to teach your kids financial literacy, but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show starts right now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Fan Upstate. Great to have you this lovely Upstate Wednesday morning. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you. Renewal by Anderson to the Carolinas fan phone, 844-FANFONE. That's 844-326-3663. You could text us 71307. Start your text with fan, F-A-N, fan, F-A-N, and we will read them on the show. And on top of all of that, Twitter, at the Rob Brown Show, at Lonzo One Word, at the Fan Upstate, and the Ray Memorial Hotline available at the Odyssey app. Go to the Odyssey app, open up the Fan Upstate page, click on the little microphone button, and drop us a 60-second voice note that comes directly to us. Why no? It's a wonderful tool.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I mean, come on.
It's an opportunity for people to make their voice heard. Literally, make their voice heard.
I understand why you're not clicking on it, why you're not leaving messages, because you, like me, want it fixed where people can see, oh, I'm supposed to click on this little tiny microphone. Because there's no explanation on the website about what it is. I know Rob has given a good explanation, but, you know, I mean, come on. So don't go click on that and leave a message for Rob. Don't do that.
Click on the Odyssey app. Click on the Fan Upstate page. Click the microphone button. Leave a message for us.
If you want to go, click on it and just say OH. I owe you every single time. I will do
you
that.
You owe them what?
I owe them me. And you know, that's why I'm here. You're welcome.
We got the water cooler cheat sheet coming up here in just a minute from now. But before we get there, let's get Kevin on the phone, kind enough to check in this AM. Callers go first. Kev, my man. What's up, big fella?
What's going on, my guys?
How we doing, partner?
Oh, man, chilling, man, before I get in here and hit this clock for the day, man. I figured I'd call my boys and just see what's happening, man. I left y'all a little voice message last sometime. But I like that little voice message, man. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I dig it. I'm a fan. I like it. It lets, you know, not just make your voice heard, but you can do it 24/7, 365. You can be sitting outside by a fire with a glass of red wine at 11:30 p.m. and say, Rob Brown needs to know what I'm thinking right now. That's fantastic. I love it.
You might get somebody beat up by his old lady, though, man. He might like the show so much, and he's just trying to get a quick little whisper in and send you a message. And she's like, hey, who are you talking to? Nothing. Then he dropped the phone. Then it's a whole fight the rest of the day.
Listen, we will be judicious with our use of the Ray Memorial Hotline, Kev. I ain't trying to get nobody divorced because of little old Rob Brown.
No, man, but hey, he might be in love with the show. He had to get it in real quick because he knew he wasn't going to call when he got to work.
All right, what you got, man, this morning, Kev?
Have you ever seen a week of when the Gamecocks and Vanderbilt would be so big of a game?
A clash of the Titans, Kev. All of a sudden, Nashville, Tennessee is the site of the biggest game in the Southeastern Conference. And for the first time in the history of me, it ain't a joke this time. This is the hottest two teams in the Southeastern Conference right now.
I like it, man. Like, this is almost like somebody's going to the championship if they win this game this weekend, man. That's just what it feels like to me right now. But, hey, I'm happy about my Tar Heels jumping on Florida State. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was more of a scrub bowl. But at the same time, my Tar Heels beat Florida State. And I think, and I would like to look this up, but since Florida State and I know we should have the best record in the ACC of beating Miami since they've been in the ACC. But I want to know, like, Florida State, I mean, they used to jump on us in the 90s, but here lately, like, we've had a good time against them here lately.
That was Mac Brown's first win against Florida State. 1-11. Now, I know that had a couple of games elsewhere that he played Florida State. I don't know how many of those were as the Tar Heels head coach, but he had not beaten Florida State at all. Florida State has in recent memory, has owned that rivalry. And I'm not taking away from North Carolina, but good God, Kevin, Florida State's a joke, dude. Like shut the program down joke.
Like, what happened, man? Like, to go with they, I know, did they lose that many players last year?
Yes and no. The other aspect of it, Kev, is that Florida State this year, because of the success, understandable, because of the success that they had last year, I think the other aspect of it was you had a significant number of people that, players that, I don't want to say bailed out because of NIL, but bailed out because of NIL. And the problem is, and we've had this conversation before, Kev, the issue you're going to bump into with NIL is you're going to end up having guys that are there that don't care about the program. They're there to get paid. And that is a risk that head coaches are going to have to take. That is a situation that head coaches are going to have to face moving forward. And Mike Norvell, because of how hard he worked the portal in you know, the name of being a portal wizard, because of how hard he worked the portal, he has found himself now in a place where he has to deal with the ramifications of having a bunch of guys there that are very clearly there to get paid, not to play. I think the success that FSU had last year is kicking them squarely in the ass, and that's all. That's it to me.
I think if I'm coming out of high school now, if I'm going just strictly money-wise, I feel like I'm going to Texas. I really feel like UT might be my place to go get it.
Let's be clear here, Kev. I mean, I'm interested to do this at the end of the year. But if you look across the college football playoff rankings, the inaugural rankings, you are going to find that the teams at the top, I would say 1 through at least 6, are also going to be inside the top 10 in NIL funding as well. Oregon had got that. Yep. They got that Phil Knight and Nike money. Ohio State has always had one of the biggest booster bases in college football. Georgia is going to be in that same boat. The University of Miami, private school, they got money down in Coral Gables. Texas, Penn State, those are they're all going to be top 10 in NIL funding. I want to make it clear. What is happening to Florida State right now should not be utilized by other coaches. I'm looking at you, Dabo, as an excuse not to play the NIL game. What it should serve is a warning that fighting players that can make NIL money versus finding players that only want to make NIL money is a cautionary tale.
And I wonder if Clemson fans really think that they're like when they went on their little run after they lost to Georgia and then getting boat raced over the weekend. What's their thought process? Because I don't feel like Clemson is really good. And I think if they did, whoever they play first round, probably going to jump on if it's a good, decent team.
Well, again, and I'll say this, and Kev, I appreciate the phone call, big dog. Good to talk to you this morning. Thanks for checking in and going ham at 7 a.m., my guy. I will say this. You remember we talked about in the last hour of the show, I said, you know, Indiana's interesting. The game against Ohio State is going to go a long way into proving that either A, they ain't played nobody, Paul, and that's a good reason to doubt them, or they ain't played nobody, but would you look at that defensively against the run game? They're tops in the country. I mean, inside the top 5, top 10, top 15 of just about every defensive stat against the run. The argument against Clemson coming into Louisville was they ain't played nobody, Paul, right? Florida State's a joke. The ACC, by and large, ain't that good. The argument against Clemson coming into this game was genuinely they ain't played nobody. And Louisville came in there, took whatever the hell they wanted from Clemson. This is what I'm talking about. This is one of those spots where the question mark of, can we trust a team that does not have a resume game like Clemson did not? They had Georgia. They got railroaded by that team. Can we trust them? And the answer to that, as of right now, is no. Is no. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's. You know what? I'm gonna put myself to the test. We're going to run through the water cooler cheat sheet. I got 6 minutes to knock out three stories. Can it be done? Yeah, it can. Item number one in the water cooler cheat sheet, as we have talked about a number of times today, and we'll continue to do so, including with Denton Day of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime coming up here in about half an hour from right now. Your college football playoff rankings, the very first in the 12-team era, are out. Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, and Miami are your top four. Going 5 through 10 are Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, and Notre Dame. 11 through 20, Bama, Boise State, SMU, Texas A&M, and LSU, Ole Miss, Iowa State, Pittsburgh, Kansas State, and Colorado. Coach Prime got the boys in the top 25. You round out the top 25. 21 through 25 is Washington State, Louisville, Clemson, Mizzou, and Army. I do not really have any issues with any of the rankings. I have some questions in there. How is Miami somehow wedged between Georgia and Texas? Why is Ohio State's one Big Ten loss good enough to put them at number two, but Penn State's one loss, which was a very good moral victory bell, cling, 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 good loss, if you will, against Ohio State, good enough to drop them down to number six. If that is the case, why is Tennessee's loss, which came earlier in the season, good enough to keep them in the top 10, but bad enough to put them behind Penn State, who just lost? I think that there are going to be question marks out there. There are going to be question marks about this squad, this selection process, that are going to be asked throughout the day, throughout the rest of the week. We'll talk with Denton Day of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime coming up in about half an hour and get his thoughts on this as well. Let's go to item number two. NFL trade deadline taking place yesterday. We have kept an eye on some of the moves that got made, and we'll be talking about our winners and losers later on in the day. We did see some moves yesterday. Za'Darius Smith ends up moving over to the Detroit Lions to give them the defensive end and pass rushing depth that they did not have. Wide receiver market was very interesting leading up to the deadline. There were picks that were made earlier in the in the season. Amari Cooper, DeAndre Hopkins, Deontay Johnson all moved. We did have a couple more yesterday. The Steelers get Mike Williams in return for a 5th round pick. The Cowboys took Jonathan Mingo and a 7th round pick off the Panthers in return for a 4th round pick next year. Pretty good move for Carolina, if you ask me. John Mingo clearly was not going to be involved with this team. So the wide receiver market got very interesting, but there were some very clear winners and losers yesterday, and we will talk about them later on. Not nearly as busy of a deadline day as I thought it was going to be. I really thought it was going to get a little bit hectic toward the close of the week, the weekday, the league close of business yesterday. Never really took off.
Yeah, me too. I thought near the end of the day that things would pick up, and they did not. But, you know, the mouthpiece of the NFL said earlier on that that he didn't see any big trades coming.
Yeah, so. And he was spot on about it. Spot on about it. We'll keep an eye on what these new pieces on new teams do and have an impact on the rest of the league as we move forward. But not really. Really thought it was going to be a busy day. Never was. Never took off the ground, and that's very, very interesting. All right, let's jump on to item number three. My dudes, my dudettes, I don't care if you're not a hockey fan. If you're not following the Carolina Hurricanes right now, you're going to have a bad time. Another game, another dub. The Philly Flyers came up to Raleigh-Durham, and the Canes sent them right back up to Philadelphia with a 6-4 loss last night. Goals scored by, like, all the Canes. Seth Jarvis had one. Jordan Martinuk had one. Marty Natchez had another one. The guy's on an absolute heater right now. Robinson, Roslovich both had goals as well. Peter Kochetkov had 16 saves, surrendered 4 goals on just 20 shots last night. It means the defense of the Canes was working. Not the best night last night for Coach Koff, but the defense kept the shot number down. This is hockey 101. If your goalkeeper is having a bad night finding the puck, if he's having a bad time finding the biscuit, if he just can't get eyeballs on the plate, you got to limit the shots defensively. You've got to close gaps, close lanes. You've got to prevent the shots on goal from happening to keep your goalkeeper who is having a bad night. And again, it was not a good night last night for Kochikov. If you can keep the shots down in a night like that, you still got to be able to go score. And the Canes did that last night. 6-4, your final. Why is this news? Not just the win, and the win is big. Not just the news and the win, and the win is enormous for the Carolina Hurricanes. This is interesting because just like that, the Canes went from second to last in the Metropolitan Division early in the season. They are now on a 7-game winning streak. No one else in the league is above a 5-game winning streak. The Canes have put 7 consecutive dubs down. That's good for 18 points, and just like that, the Carolina Hurricanes find themselves on top of the Metropolitan Division. They have 18 points, as do the Devils. However, the New Jersey Devils have played 23 games. The Carolina Hurricanes have played 15 games. The Carolina Hurricanes have played 11. So they've got the same number of points, but they did it in 4 fewer games, which puts them atop the Devils in the Metropolitan Division. This Hurricanes team, I know it's early. There's still plenty of possibilities out there. There's still plenty of spots that things can go differently, can go sideways. There's still a ton of places that, injuries here and there, coaching decisions that could change this season up. But for now, this Hurricanes team is Stanley Cup caliber. This Hurricane team right now is championship caliber. And I think even if you're not a big hockey guy, you should be paying attention. There's your water cooler cheat sheet, top 3 sports stories. All that you need to know when we come back here in a minute. Let's take our first look at trade deadline winners onto losers from the National Football League. Then in the final segment of this hour, we will be joined by Denton Day, college football host for SiriusXM's College Football Overtime. We'll get his thoughts on the initial playoff rankings, his thoughts about the Carolina win over Texas. Over Texas A&M, pardon me. I want you to know, when the Gamecocks put up tutty number 2 in the second half of that game, Denton Day texted me and said, "Look at the Gamecocks." He's on board. He's bought in. We'll find out how he feels after that win and more, all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
The Rob Brown Show carries on. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob the Great Milonzo. And yeah, we'll be a part of the radio broadcast. The renewal by Anderson of the Carolinas fan phone, 844. FANFONE 844-326-3663. Text us 71307. Start your text with FAN, FAN, and we will read them on the radio broadcast. So we got a lot to get to and a lot to talk about. Yesterday, the NFL trade deadline passed, and overall, an uneventful deadline. Not an uneventful trade season, but an uneventful deadline. We did have a couple of moves that took place yesterday. Marshawn Lattimore of the New Orleans Saints joins the Washington Commanders. Bum, 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 in return for a third-round pick, which is a Saints fan. I'm happy with. It's time to pay the piper. The cap is
more
bad.
Than likely, that's the most impactful trade of yesterday. But we had a few trades before we got to the deadline, including Hopkins going to Kansas City.
Exactly. So. Like I said, I think it was the majority of the moves that are impactful took place. Not no impactful moves yesterday. Detroit made one. Washington made one. Their pass defense just absolutely got upgraded with the addition of Marshawn Lattimore, who is probably the best cornerback the Saints have ever had. All of that being said, winners and losers. And it's not just trade deadline, it's trade season as a whole. I would start with, and I think it was made evident Monday evening, the Kansas City Chiefs. The pickup of Nuke, where a lot of people said, oh, it's 32-year-old wide receiver, is he still that same cat? Well, he damn sure was Monday night. 80-plus yards, a pair of touchdowns was pivotal in the Kansas City Chiefs remaining the only undefeated team in the National Football League. So that's that one pick made the Kansas City Chiefs winners. That was bigger than I think at the time we knew it was going to be a big pickup, but we were probably a little bit concerned that maybe this cat is past his prime. Came in first, I mean, had a couple of catches in his first game on what, 2 days of practice. And then he shows up Monday after a full week of practice, and that offense looks more explosive with him already.
Yeah, and he is still learning the offense. It's going to take him, what, a month maybe, if that, to get everything down. So they're just putting certain packages, him in certain packages that he's learned so far. And they could get some other receivers back and then look out. Also, I think Marshawn Lattimore could be equally as a big deal to Washington, because Washington's already good.
Yep.
You know, we keep talking about that Detroit is the NFC. What about Washington?
I mean, Rob Brown's got a 22-1 ticket out for the Commanders to win the NFC East. They feel pretty good about it.
And their defense just improved.
A lot. Again, I think there are some guys. Za'Darius Smith, who went over to Detroit, kind of in the same boat as far as I'm concerned. This team just got better, for sure. Without a doubt, this team just got better. This team got better, not just by adding a pass rusher, which to me, as you get to the trade deadline, adding depth to your pass rush is one of the most impactful things anybody can do. Washington just added a top five NFL cornerback to their defense, which also, because their defense has allowed some teams to command the football, likely earns you a few more Jaden Daniels-led possessions per game. You're going to get a couple of picks out of this guy. He's going to get you minimum two or three interceptions throughout the rest of the year. Also going to shorten up drives. I love that pickup. As far as I'm concerned, that one move along. And to get it for a third-round pick, that's a guy that, if the Saints were contenders, this is the offseason, and he's got to move, that's a guy who could get a second or a first-round pick. You got him for a fourth-round pick. That's as good as any fourth-round pick player you're going to find in the draft. Now, you're going to have to pay the guy. The reason New Orleans dumped him is because they're going to come into this offseason $60 to $80 million over the cap after the cap increases this offseason, and it will again. Even after the cap increases, the Saints have to shed numbers right now, and they got a fourth rounder back. We talked about this yesterday. You want to build a football team at the National Football League level, you do it through the draft. And the Saints just added a second-day pick, an early second-day pick. And by the way, I do think Washington will win that division. I think Washington's going to the playoffs. I think they're in the top, right? And I think they can win a couple of playoff games with Jaden Daniels at the helm. This is probably going to end up being a early third round pick that New Orleans just picked up. As much as it feel like the Saints are losers, they're not. They got an early second day pick, and they shed dozens of millions of dollars that needed to be shed with one move. That's a winning move for New Orleans. It's an even better move for the Commanders.
Isn't it equally as surprising that there were some big names out there that didn't go anywhere? So if you're Cooper Kupp, and you know that you were out there on the trade block, do you still play the same way? I guess he probably would, but wouldn't your feelings be a little bit hurt? Wouldn't it affect your play knowing that they're willing to deal you and then you're still on the same team?
Not necessarily. I mean, I'd like to think that I'd have the mentality, and this is why you hear every NFL player and every NFL coach at some point somewhere say, this is a business, first and foremost. This is a business. You may love your team, you may love your squad, but the only people that matters to are fans. Shouldn't matter. I mean, yes, I want players like Cam Jordan has been in New Orleans who love the team, who love the community, who love the culture, who love the city that they're in. Of course, I would rather play in a city that I love than be shipped up to Buffalo, New York.
I think the closest thing to it in everyday work would be being up for a promotion and not getting it.
Yeah.
And then still having to work, knowing that you believe you were better than the guy or the girl who got the promotion, and you've got to act like everything's okay.
I think it's fair, but at the same time, don't you still have to come into that? Wouldn't you, if you were the person handing out a promotion, look that guy and that gal in the face and say, hey, this is still your job. It's a business. This is still your job. You show up and you do your job and you attack your job, or you will not just lose the promotion, you'll lose your regular job too. If I'm an NFL player, if you're a Cleveland Brown, why even try? Somebody asked that question on the internet yesterday. If I'm a Brown, don't you just fake an injury for the rest of the year? Save it. You got to try. Because at the end of the day, and this is something that my old man used to tell me, even if you hate your job, you hate your boss, you hate your manager, you hate the day, you hate the task, whatever, my old man used to say, you're not doing it for today. You're doing it for the next job. You're doing it for the resume boost. You're doing it so that you can finish that project, stick that onto your CV, call the next job and go, hey, I just completed this big time project for a company that I don't even like working for. So you know you can trust me. You know you can trust me. All right, who lost? I'm starting with the Dallas Cowboys. I think Dallas absolute losers at trade deadline day. I mean, they've been losers all year long. But I think they're absolutely losers.
Why are you singling Dallas out? There's some bad teams who could have gotten better who didn't make any moves.
I'm singling Dallas out for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't like them. Number two, because Dallas was the only team that had their owner/GM out there going, we're all in. We're all in. We're going to go get the best players. We're not worried about money. Money's no object. I'm Jerry Jones. I got $70 billion. We're all in.
Does he really have that much?
I don't know.
Yeah, $70 billion. That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, he doesn't have $70 billion. Jerry Jones. Net worth $15.4 billion. Only. Pathetic.
It's a big difference there, yeah, Rob.
Absolute peon, Jerry. Because the Cowboys made this big deal this offseason about how they're all in. They're going in. They came and they got Jonathan Mingo. Is that a game changer? No. Jonathan Mingo couldn't find a way onto the field for the Carolina Panthers. How's he changing the offense of the Dallas Cowboys?
You got to look and think, depending on how you feel about Dak, it's an upgraded quarterback. It is an upgraded quarterback.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so with an upgraded quarterback, he's got a better shot at getting on the field.
I don't think so, because I would also say, it's an upgrade for a wide receiver core room that he's in, too. Yeah, he's got a better quarterback throwing to the ball, but he's also got more better dudes. They know CeeDee Lamb in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, but you know what happens then? You get open.
I mean, again, if he gets on the field.
Right, but
if he gets on the field.
I think he will.
I don't know.
You were pretty high on Mingo for a while.
I was pretty high on Mingo for a while, and then I stopped doing that this preseason when he got his chance to shine, and as far as I'm concerned, he didn't. There was one play on the sideline that I can tell you the moment I broke. The moment I broke was there was an out route for Mingo, a field crossing out route that I think Andy Dalton was in at QB at this point, threw him the ball, and John Mingo, all he had to do was slow the route, and the ball's hitting you in the chest. He overran the target destination of the football, and then instead of planting the foot, turning around and catching it behind him, Lonzo, he jumped, still moving forward, to catch a ball that was behind him, and the result was he made the catch. And then he landed 3 feet out of bounds when he did not need to. And that's the moment that I went, this guy's not, he's just not. I'm not saying he can't get there. Maybe change of scenery works out great and John Mingo becomes the guy Carolina wanted him to be. But a fourth round pick for Carolina is valuable right now. fourth round pick for Carolina for a guy who could not break onto the field when the leading wide receivers down there were Adam Thielen, rookie Jalen Coker, and rookie Xavier Leggett when he's been in the league a couple of years. For a fourth round pick, Carolina actually won. Carolina won this trade as far as I am concerned. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, Denton Day is the host of College Football Overtime for SiriusXM. Denton will join us in the next segment to talk about the inaugural 12-team college football playoff rankings. That's next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. Heather Dinich on ESPN brought the noise today. Leather Dinich brought the noise today. Heather said, you put me on TV and I'm breaking out the good stuff. Good on Heather, bringing it today. You know who else is bringing it? He is the host of College Football Overtime on SiriusXM. He is a host on the BetQL Network alongside yours truly. He is a host on 106.7 The Fan, and he is one handsome son of a gun. Denton Day joining us here on the show. What's up, big fella?
What up, fellas? If I would have known that Heather Dinch was wearing leather, I would have worn some leather today. Instead, I wore a Stone Cold Steve Austin shirt, so you can tell me which one is better.
For the record, we like that more. Just so we're clear. Yeah. Yeah. Rob Brown 316 says, we're good with it. We're good. Denton Day joining us every single Wednesday in this time slot to talk some college football. Let's start with yesterday's college football power rankings, the playoff rankings for the inaugural 12-team playoff dropped yesterday. Denton Day, 30,000-foot view, biggest problem, any problems, good with it?
I wouldn't say problems necessarily. I tend to think that the first rankings at least give you some sort of idea of how the committee is looking at things, but I also realize that a lot of this stuff is such a cop-out, where they're like, well, these things will eventually work themselves out, so we don't really have to have too much responsibility on our plate for it. I would agree with the 12 teams that got into the top 12 this week. I would maybe move and adjust some teams. I would have moved BYU up a little bit. I might have moved Indiana up a little bit. I think you could make a real argument that BYU maybe deserves a higher spot than Penn State does at this point. But outside of that, like, that's really just semantics. If BYU wins the Big 12, it's not going to matter. They're going to get a bye, and they'll be ahead of Penn State. So it's things like that where, like, I love watching the rankings. I think it's great. It's great for us, right? Like, I'm sure your show has been a lot easier this morning because of the rankings. But there really is a lack of responsibility by the committee as long as they just get 12 good teams in there.
Denton Day joining us here on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. My question, Denton, and it's been this way. This is not new to the playoffs, but it's always been. I really wish we had more oversight into or I guess more understanding of the process itself, because Ohio State goes to number two. I don't really have an issue with that. I think Ohio State's one of the best teams in college football this year. I think they have been for a long time. But Georgia, Miami, Texas. How is Miami stacked in between these two teams? Why are they not either higher than both or lower than both? How is Penn State, whose only loss is to one of the top two teams in the country in the Big Ten, dropped all the way to six, when Ohio State, whose only loss is to one of the best teams in the country out of the Big Ten, stays all the way up at number two? How is Penn State's loss, say, better, not better than Georgia's loss to a two-loss Alabama? The only thing I have is, and I agree, a lot of the kinks are going to work themselves out by the end of the regular season and certainly by the end of conference championship weekend. But there's just a lot of stuff that I go, I wish I had a better understanding of the process of the rankings, because some of the decisions I don't really understand. I'm not saying I have a big problem with them. I just don't understand them.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things where I guess we have to give them a little bit of grace, because this is the first time they've done it in this model. But a lot of the stuff you just mentioned, Rob, is correct in the fact that it logically does not add up. And we're not given, you know, Ward Manuel will do, he'll do a spot on ESPN and then he does a conference call after, right? And that's something they've done every single year with the college football playoff, regardless of how many teams are getting in, to attempt to explain the process. But he never actually answers questions, whether it's Ward Manuel, Rob Malek, whoever it has been, which, by the way, the fact is Ward Manuel this year is hilarious, because he was the guy that had Connor Stallions literally under his watchful eye. Now he's in charge of the most important thing in the sport. But that aside, they never give a great explanation. And maybe that's to protect, like, the process. Like, they don't want it to be skewed in any way, shape, or form. But I often think it's a cop-out. Because why is it that some of these unbeaten teams are further down the list than some of these one-loss teams? But then how do you explain some of these one-loss teams being ranked in certain areas versus other one-loss teams? Like, I can understand why Ohio State and Penn State are in different spots, right? Because Ohio State beat Penn State, and they're more talented than Penn State. And I can look at a lot of the teams above Penn State and say, yeah, they're way more talented than Penn State is offensively because Penn State doesn't have a great wide receiver. And while their tight end is awesome, you're not winning the college football playoff with a slightly above average quarterback and a really good tight end. You got to have an elite wide receiver. But I don't understand, you know, how they formulate certain losses and then judge them based off of that. Like, if we're going to do this, and we are with the 12-team playoff, you have to give us some sort of insight as to what you are looking at and then how you qualify who is better than who when it comes to these one-loss teams.
I do not disagree with any of that. I don't have a problem with any of the decisions. I just wish I knew better why they were made. Looking from 12 back, and I understand that it's not the teams ranked 1 through 12 that are going to go. There's a whole lot more to it than that. But if we look at teams that are 12 back, Boise State, SMU, A&M, LSU, Ole Miss, Iowa State, Pitt, Kansas State, Colorado, Washington State, Louisville, Clemson, Mizzou, and undefeated Army at number 25, is there a team in the bottom half of this top 25, Denton Day, that you're circling as probably in, you like them to get in, they jump off the page at you, anything like that?
So the big one, I think, is Colorado. You know, that Iowa State loss opened up a door for Colorado to potentially get themselves in. They just have to win the Big 12 to do that. And they're a good football team this year. They don't get a lot of the hype that they got last year, and part of that is okay, although they're much more deserving of some of that attention now than they were in September of last year. But I think there's an easier path for them than there are for most. I think you could also argue that there's a slightly easier path for Clemson than for most. Now, the loss this weekend did not help that. You have to beat Pitt, and then you kind of need SMU to lose. But if you get yourself into the ACC championship game, all you have to do is win that one game. So if you're looking at the teams on the back end of this list, if there's a path for them into their championship game, those are the ones that I would lean towards. Army's going to be interesting, though, Rob, because right now Boise State feels like they have a definitive lead in terms of the Group of Five race. But if Army beats Notre Dame, not only are you knocking Notre Dame out of the college football playoff, you then have the best win that a Group of Five is going to have because Boise State doesn't have anywhere near as good as Notre Dame on their schedule the rest of the way. That's just a lot easier said than done because Notre Dame's a good football team, and traditionally Army is not a team that's going to have that sort of success against a team like that. So that would be one that I think would be very interesting. I don't know that Army has a great chance against Notre Dame, but at least they have a chance. So that they're a team I would watch.
Notre Dame has a 7-1 record, checking in at number 10. That one loss is as bad as any of the one loss Power 5 teams have anywhere than Northern Illinois, a team that I like quite a bit, but not a good loss for the Irish, and for a team that does not have a conference championship game available to them, Denton Day, is winning out enough for Notre Dame?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the things that we've seen today. Because they're in the top 12, if they win out, they're going to be in. You know, that USC game at the end is not going to be as good of a win as you would have hoped, but because you're positioned where you are, you have to lose to fall from that spot. You might end up as 11 or 12, but you have to lose to fall from that spot. There's no chance where now that Notre Dame in their first ranking being at 10 is going to fall out of the top 12 if they win out.
Denton Day, host on Sirius XM's College of Football Overtime on the BetQL Network and on 106.7 The Fan, joins us every Wednesday to talk college football with us. All right, let's flip Denton Day to the two teams down here that we exclusively and primarily cover. And we'll start with a team that you texted me out of the blue talking about, the Gamecocks, on Saturday night at the house against the Aggies of A&M. I've made this point a couple of times. The Gamecocks are 5-3. They are, I think, a couple of jobbed penalties out of winning the LSU game. That would be 6-2. And they were damn near close to beating Alabama and potentially being, they are probably 5 to 7 snaps of the football away from being a 7-1 team. And then the Aggies roll into town. Number 10, only undefeated team in the Southeastern Conference on Saturday night. And every Aggie's in Columbia on the state house steps doing their dumb little yell. They're a Colt Denton Day. I got a real big problem with them. They're a bunch of damn weirdos, and I need them to know it. And then South Carolina adds another L to College Station and sends them back to the house. My take on it was this. That's a program-defining win for South Carolina if they can carry that momentum forward. All of a sudden, that Vanderbilt win is the one that you go, hey, not really a guarantee. But if South Carolina can go to Nashville, where Alabama fell, and knock Vanderbilt off in Nashville, Tennessee, I think people have got to start saying Shane Beamer may have something a little cooking over in Columbia.
It's a program-defining win. It's a career-defining win to this point for Shane Beamer. That's the best win that he's had as the head coach of South Carolina. The environment there was crazy. I mean, it was rocking down there. I love the uniforms, by the way, and not just because they revealed them with Batman symbolism as a guy that has a Batman sleeve. But I loved what they were able to do, and it felt like they knew that they were going to win walking in there. And I don't know how many times you've been able to say that over the past couple of years, decades even, with South Carolina when you're playing a team that is unbeaten in the SEC in November. Now, Texas A&M obviously is not Bama or Georgia, so to speak, but you handled your business. That was a great win, and you're right. They have to use that momentum moving forward. You can't do kind of what Texas A&M did, which was beat LSU and then immediately fall the next week. But if you can utilize that momentum, the SEC, as we have seen this year, Rob, is more fluid than ever before. And I only think that's going to continue as the years progress. So if you can use that kind of momentum, and that was, that was a great win because you were the main event on a Saturday night, you could really have this program, instead of stepping in the right direction, start to make maybe a leap or a bound in the right direction. And then who knows, in 2-3 years, use that momentum properly, and you're in these conversations in November for being ranked in the top 12.
The path for the Gamecocks, so that we're clear, to an SEC title game is there, but they would need a hell of a lot of help. Like a lot more help than everyone else. To me, Denton Day, it's about stacking the momentum of this game against Vanderbilt. It's about knocking off a team that I think is very beatable. I think Mizzou was overrated from week one. Right. I never understood why they were there. And all of a sudden, that Clemson game on the road don't look quite as scary as it did maybe before this past weekend, Denton Day. A team that we were saying just become bowl eligible. And by the way, Wofford's tossed in there. There's your bowl eligibility win right there. This team we wanted to say, hey, let's be 6-6. I genuinely think could end this year 9-3, Denton Day.
I think it's very possible. Now, that Clemson win is going to be – that's going to be the big one the rest of the year. Like, obviously, you got to handle Vanderbilt, right? But the Clemson win is going to be the big one because I think there will still be a potential for Clemson to get to the ACC championship based off of maybe not based off of that win because that's not in the ACC play, but just to make sure that they have a good standing going into the ACC championship potentially. The loss for Clemson this weekend was, I think, the worst of the weekend. You can't lose that game. Dabo, I praised on your show for some of his coaching abilities, just not understanding the nuances of when to go for two, when to not go for two. It was really disappointing. I also got skewered by Miami fans because I was talking dirt on them, and then Clemson goes and loses. So I wasn't thrilled with the way that Clemson played, but I think 9 wins for South Carolina for the first time in years is very much a possibility.
I do too. Talk to me about Clemson. That loss to Louisville, it stings. Loss number 2 on the season. I think we were all kind of looking and being willing to accept the Georgia L, especially in week 1. And then Clemson went on a roll and they're back. They're a good team again. Kate Klubnik, and I for the record, me too. I was guilty of it. Kate Klubnik's a Heisman candidate all of the sudden. It's not that they lost to Louisville, Denton Day. It's that Louisville came into their house and told them exactly what they were going to do and then did it. This loss to me feels like one of the most impactful. I said, but my take on Monday was South Carolina had a program defining result. So did Clemson.
Yeah, this was not good. This really speaks to where Clemson is as a program in that 5-6 years ago, they never lose this game. They never do. And the way, not just the way they lost it, but losing that game at home, when you are in the driver's seat to get to the ACC championship game and then to get to the college football playoff, potentially with a bye, all the culmination of all of that, I don't know if it was the pressure. I don't know what the actual reason is, and I'm sure Dabo will wax poetically about it. But that is a game you cannot lose. You have to be prepared for a team like Louisville, especially after you had just seen in weeks prior Miami blow their doors off. You have to go in there and blow their doors off. For all that conversation about how Cade Klubnik should be in the Heisman conversation because look how good our offense is since the Georgia game. Like, that was just – that was the outlier. Well, maybe it wasn't the outlier. Maybe that actually is more similar to who you are and everything else in between, which is the benefit of playing teams that are not near your level. So I was really bummed. I was really upset with that because I did want to see Miami and Clemson ACC championship game. Still a potential, but it seems now that we're going to get SMU in Miami, which is a vastly different matchup.
Yes, it is. Real quick, 30-second answer. What's your thoughts on SMU?
I think they're a good team. I don't know that they stand a chance against Miami. I don't think they have the kind of offense to run with Miami, but I do think they're a fun football team to watch.
The switch to Kevin Jennings was the right move. We got Denton Day. He is the host of SiriusXM's College Football Overtime. You can also find him on the BetQL Network. You can also find him on 106.7 The Fan, and you can find him here every Wednesday on the Rob Brown Show at 7:35. My dude, great to have you back. Enjoy the college football weekend. We'll do it next week, brother.
Fellas, appreciate it. I'll make sure to wear leather next week.
I don't know. You break out another wrestling shirt. We're good with that, too. Break the glass. Denton Day, talk to you next week. Thank you, big dog. Lonzo blows your mind right now with this sports flash.
The first rankings for the 12-team college football playoffs dropped last night, and the Oregon Ducks are number one. Their Big Ten rivals, Ohio State, are number two, followed by the SEC's Georgia Bulldogs and the ACC's Miami Hurricanes. Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, and Notre Dame round out the top 10, followed by Alabama, SMU, Texas A&M, and LSU. And Colorado comes in at 20, Clemson at 23, and Army is at 25. Philadelphia 76ers superstar Joel Embiid has been suspended 3 games without pay for shoving a reporter in the locker room after a loss to Memphis Saturday. Embiid shoved Philly Inquirer writer Marcus Hayes, who wrote a paragraph that included references to Embiid's younger son and late brother. Tune in Saturday at 12:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Wofford Terriers. It's Furman versus Wofford right here on your home for Paladins football, The Fan, Upstate.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.